and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, August 16, 2023. Some residents of Unity State Capital, Bantu, say they're able to see again after attending free eye surgeries.
When I came, I was shocked by the conditions I got here. The level of blindness is so high. We got the trachoma. It's so much, actually endemic in this region.
And the United Nations says ethnic conflict looms in Sudan's Darfur region.
We've seen a resumption of the ethnic cleansing on the part of Arab militias who are wantonly using violence and including murder to intimidate local populations.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Hundreds of people living with disabilities gathered in the South Sudan's capital, Juba, Tuesday to celebrate the ratification of the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. The head of the South Sudan Union of Persons with Disabilities says he hopes South Sudanese will stop discrimination against people with disabilities after the ratification of the UN Convention. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
President Salva Kiir signed the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities 6 months ago, making South Sudan the 185th country to ratify the UN Convention. Diana Joseph is the head of the South Sudan Women with Disabilities. She says the signing and ratification of the convention gives persons with disabilities equal rights to participate in socio-economic and political activities in South Sudan.
I have not seen someone representing women with disability, whether being in the ministerial positions or in the parliament. So by signing this UN convention, it also reminds the government that now the Convention for Persons with Disability has been ratified. So women with disability has seats in the parliament and to sit in every seat where women are needed.
Joseph says many children with disabilities have been left at home without access to education due to societal biases and discrimination against people living with disabilities. Augustine Wudu Ilario, chairperson of the South Sudan Union of Persons with Disabilities, says sign language should be introduced in schools to cater for students with hearing impairment.
The armed violence of 2013 and 2016 had immensely raised the population of persons with disabilities in South Sudan, and most of them are living in a desperate life without access to basic needs such as food, shelter, health care services, and many others. We are always looked at as long-term recipients of assistance. However, we have a potential to contribute to the development of this nation when we are given the opportunities.
The head of UNMISS Human Rights Division, James Bandar, says South Sudan should incorporate the convention into its laws.
This convention is unique because it interprets policies that incorporate the right of persons with disability. It is a legal binding document that really removes barriers and paves ways for equal enjoyment of the right of persons with disability in all aspects.
Article 7 of the convention tasks the government to domesticate and incorporate the convention into its laws, while Article 12 obligates the government to give equal rights to persons with disabilities before the law. Esther Ikere, Undersecretary in the Ministry of Gender, Child and Social Welfare, says the government of South Sudan should create awareness about the rights of people living with disabilities.
As a ministry, one of the key tasks in this implementation is to ensure that the convention is disseminated at the national and the state level. And through this dissemination, we have to ensure that the convention is interpreted using our own languages.
The UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities is an international protocol that promotes, protects, and ensures equal enjoyment of human rights and fundamental freedoms by all persons with disabilities. Tuesday's celebration was held under the theme Disability Rights Are Human Rights, Remove Barriers and Promote Inclusion, Leaving No One Behind. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio, reporting from Juba.
More than 120 South Sudanese who have been suffering from trachoma are now able to see after attending a free eye surgery at a UN-run protection of civilians site in Unity State Capital, Bantu. For VOA News, Lich Nyak Jok reports from Bantu.
The operation was sponsored by the Christian Blind Mission in collaboration with South Sudan National Minister of Health. Dr. Albino Nyabong, who carried out the surgery, say he operated 222 trachoma patients at the POC site over the past 2 weeks.
When I came, I was shocked by the conditions I got here. The level of blindness is so high. We got the trachoma. It's so much, actually endemic in this region, and mostly among children. Also, cataract is so common.
Trachoma is a bacterial infection that affects the eye, leading to loss of sight. Dr. Nyabong say poor sanitation is to blame for the frequency of trachoma cases in United States.
When you are not getting clean water to wash and to shower, the eye get infected, and it also started in early childhood with frequent or recurrent infection from time to time. Over time, with the severity of the infection, the lashes turn in. Then they start rubbing on the cornea, on the globe, and that actually created a lot of infection, pain, sensitivity to light. Then now it attracts flies because there's a lot of discharge in the eyes.
According to the World Health Organization, the trachoma is contagious and spread through contact with the eye, eyelid, and nose or throat traction of infected people. Kalman Kwanlam is one of the beneficiaries of the pre-eye surgeries. Lam say he has been blind for the past 6 years. He say he has made a several attempts to seek for treatment.
In 2021, I went to Khartoum looking for operations. I was given appointments by a doctor that I should come back. I would have go back this year. When Khartoum crisis happens, there was no alternative. Until God opened the way, the doctor have come here.
Banja Daniel is a trachoma program manager at the Christian Blind Mission, which sponsored the surgeries. He say his group plan to conduct more surgeries in 7 counties of Unity State over the next several months.
The whole of Unity State, we have a backlog of over 16,000 people who need surgeries. With the support from CPM to the Minister of Health, there is a reduction by 17.4% from the 16,000, meaning Minister of Health, with the support, has been able to operate closely to 3,000 patients.
The sheer person of internet displaced person sheltering at the POC site, Shab Ungwit, say she is working with other community to create an awareness about eye disease in United States.
Our social mobilizer go door to door to make sure that everyone got the information. And the cases about eye is when you look at it, it's everyone will to go back to their daily routine to go and, you know, seeing again, it's never easy. That's why we sometimes call it a miracle. Everyone wanted to be part of that miracle.
Dr. Nyabong say eye cataract are also common among internet displaced persons in United States. For BA News, I'm Liel Nyajua, reporting from Bintu, United States.
From Bantu, we go to Sudan, where analysts say the conflict there has reached a stalemate, with both militarily and diplomatically, with little hope of swift to end the war. Meanwhile, those arriving in South Sudan, having just fled from Khartoum, describe a city on the verge of collapse. Henry Wilkins reports from Jodar, South Sudan.
A few hours earlier, Niall Anfar crossed the border into South Sudan and returned to the land of her birth after fleeing the fighting in Khartoum. During the journey, she gave birth to a baby girl. She described the city on the verge of collapse, with parts of the population under bombardment. She says aircraft were firing missiles over people and gunshots. She says her neighbour was also shot while she escaped the city without even taking any clothes with her, adding her neighbour was shot along with her 3-year-old daughter. Many people who fled Khartoum told VOA they are hoping for a swift end to the conflict so they can get on with their lives. Some analysts say a narrow window for dialogue about stopping the fighting in Sudan may have opened. A report last month from the International Crisis Group, a Belgian-based research group, said the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, had gained an upper hand over the Sudanese armed forces, the SAF in Khartoum, suggesting the SAF may be more willing to come to the negotiating table. According to other analysts, the window may have already closed, if it ever existed at all.
I would not agree with assessments that some have made to suggest that either the RSF was about to take back control of Khartoum. The future of the country depends on there being only one national army. And I just don't see how we can get there through a kind of political process that folds in elements of the RSF into the SAP.
Before the conflict started, attempts were made to merge the once friendly, now warring military factions. Diplomatic efforts to get the parties back on the same side have so far been unsuccessful.
What's problematic about this is that one side will always see one of these tracks as being biased. So unless we have one very strong, broad coalition of international partners that can come together in a way that doesn't, is not perceived as being biased.
Daniel Dayin, who has also recently fled from Khartoum, says he does not know how long the conflict will last.
Life in Sudan become very bad for us, especially with South Sudanese. That's why we decided to come here so that we can go to our homeland. So up to now, we don't see this situation whether it will end, because all houses were being burned. So they are also, they have killed so many people.
Dayen says he dreads having to rebuild his life in the ruins left behind by the war. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Jodah, South Sudan.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the United Nations says Sudan's conflict has turned into ethnic clashes. Find out why after the break.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on plus one 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, plus one 202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. UN officials say the scene of Darfur's genocidal war in the early 2000s is about to repeat itself as the conflict in Sudan has changed into ethnic violence. Joseph Sigley, director of research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, discusses different conflict scenarios in Sudan with VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi.
Unfortunately, I believe it is. And that's exactly what we're seeing. There was a UN peacekeeping force in Darfur for many years up until late 2020, and that had a profound dampening effect on these sort of ethnically based violent acts, and that really helped turn the situation around there, where Darfur region was able to rebuild. And, you know, with the withdrawal of the UN, with the collapse of government in Sudan, you know, with fewer reporters able to travel, it's really become open season on the civilian communities there in Darfur. And so we've seen a resumption of the ethnic cleansing on the part of Arab militias, who are wantonly using violence and including murder to intimidate local populations. There's widespread looting. And really, the aim seems to be to drive these African communities, mostly the Masalit people, off their land, which these are diverse Arab groups would be able to claim for themselves.
With the international and regional focus on the Niger crisis, do you foresee any possibility of a negotiated or mediated closure to the conflict in Sudan?
I do. There are still enough people focused on Sudan and many strong interests within the region internationally to see this stabilized. And you know, the most realistic option for stabilization is if we saw a restoration of the civilian transitional government, and they would then be able to generate some sort of, you know, popular legitimacy and support that could help bring the country back together. They would also have international legitimacy and support, which would be so badly needed to rebuild Sudan. And they would have credibility for trying to establish credible institutions that would actually provide services and benefit the general population. In practical terms, this would likely require some sort of UN force to support civilian government and to serve as a trust-building mechanism between the two rival Sudanese military factions. It would also be important as a means of reassuring all the neighbors that no other entity, no other foreign entity would try to exploit the situation for their own benefit to the detriment of other neighbors. Again, this would require in the negotiations for both of the military factions to realize that you know, they will not be recognized as the head of state in a new Sudan. And with the realization that there isn't a political end game for them, and by squeezing the financial intermediaries by which they are profiting from the conflict and conveying to them that they won't be able to continue to exploit Sudan's resources, then I think they will feel and recognize just how isolated they are. And this will compel them to negotiate some sort of exit strategy for themselves, where they leave the country.
But how do you explain excluding Sudanese civilian supporters of democracy from all attempts to reach a negotiated solution to the conflict in Sudan?
There are multiple venues, initiatives underway to try and facilitate some sort of negotiation. And you're right that those that are excluding the civilians are really non-starter. You know, in the end, this is a political conflict, and you're going to need a political solution. And civilians are going to be central to that. That's really the only way this is going to be stabilized in any sustainable way. And, you know, negotiations that are purely focusing on the military actors are missing that part. Clearly, there have to be incentives for the military actors to stand down. But we need to remember, this isn't a civil conflict. This is competition between two rival factions, and the citizens, the Sudanese, are in the way. But they, you know, even if one side were to prevail, they wouldn't be able to command the support of the general population where they could actually lead a government. They wouldn't be recognized internationally. And so it's a big defect for those negotiations that aren't bringing in the civilians.
That's Joseph Segal, Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies. He was speaking with VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi. In Malawi, a South African nation that criminalizes homosexuality, religious leaders have spoken out against same-sex relations, while Parliament recommends a referendum on whether to legalize same-sex marriage. Civil society organizations say human rights should not be subjected to a popular vote. From the capital, Lilongwe, Chimwemwe Pada has the story.
A debate is raging in Malawi over homosexuality, a criminal offense in the southern African nation that can draw a prison sentence of up to 14 years. The faith leaders of the mostly Christian country recently led nationwide street protests prompted by High Court cases in which a Dutch national man and a transgender Malawian woman are challenging the constitutionality of the country's laws concerning LGBTQI+ people. Some protesters worry that the cases might move toward validating LGBTQI plus relationships. The Reverend Philip Gamboline of the Church of Central Africa Presbyterian says marriage should be between a man and a woman.
It is God who initiated the marriage. And when God created a man, he saw it fit to create a woman to be his wife in order to reproduce and make a church. So because it is God's purpose, we cannot deviate enough from his purpose. We condone this behavior of sex, homosexuality. Obviously, we are killing the church and there will be no children.
Faith leaders like Gamboline are now suggesting that the government should conduct a referendum over banning same-sex marriage. The International Relations Committee of Parliament has submitted a report to the governing body detailing its position on homosexuality. In this report, Parliament agrees with the religious leaders on possibilities of holding a referendum on same-sex marriages. The committee suggests that all protocols, including proposed laws concerning the LGBTQI plus community, should be put to people to decide, says Vice Chairperson Victoria Kingston.
This should be left in the hands of Parliament to deliberate and should put to people to decide in a form of referendum.
LGBTQI plus community members worry that with the increased focus on their rights, they will be targeted for violence. One member who asked not to be named for security reasons says the fear is constant.
Kind of puts us in a corner where we're not even, will be as isolated as before, more than before actually. It really has that implication. But it also limits the freedom of expression. I mean, that's a human right.
Michael Kayatsa, Executive Director of Malawi Center for Human Rights and Rehabilitation, cautions against holding the referendum, which he fears would block the advancement of LGBTQI plus rights. He says human rights should not be decided through a popular vote.
What they might need to do is maybe, you know, prioritize dialogue, because what the church is saying is contrary to what the community here in Malawi wants. Nobody in Malawi, not even the LGBT-led organizations, are talking about same-sex marriage. What people are saying is that they simply want to, you know, have the rights and enjoy their rights as human beings. It would be a waste of time. It would be a waste of resources to conduct a referendum.
In a petition delivered to Parliament, faith leaders want lawmakers not to pass any law that supports same-sex marriages. Human rights organizations worry this stand will fuel discrimination and violence against the country's already disadvantaged LGBTQI plus community. Chimwe Balata, VOA News, Malawi.
From Malawi, we go to Niger, where the junta says it may try Bazoum for treason. Timothy Obiezo in Lagos reports on ECOWAS' reaction to the charge and what it could mean in terms of either a military intervention or diplomatic solution to Niger's crisis.
The regional bloc called the attempts to bring charges of high treason against President Mohamed Bazoum provocative and said it contradicted the coup leader's recent willingness to pursue a peaceful resolution. While calling for his immediate release and reinstatement, ECOWAS emphasized that Bazoum remained the country's legitimate leader. Niger's military junta spokesman, Major Amadou Abdourahmane, announced the charge against Bazoum in a televised address Sunday. Abdourahmane said Bazoum had undermined Niger's internal and external security and that he had been communicating with high-ranking regional politicians who are, in Abdourahmane's words, trying to truncate the peaceful resolution of the crisis in Niger in a bid to support a military invasion. The plan by coup leaders to try Bazoum for treason came hours after they agreed to hold talks with ECOWAS. An ECOWAS spokesperson did not respond to calls for comment, but political analyst Rotimi Olawale says Niger's junta is using Bazoum to strengthen its hand in negotiations with the regional bloc.
The military junta are using every tactic in the book, one to claim legitimacy to power in Niger, but also as bargaining chip in the conversation and discussion with the regional body ECOWAS and with the wider international community. Treason is something that you would see many countries pull up as accusation one way or the other. But I'm sure it's part of the negotiation strategy of the military regime to find soft landing for themselves.
Soldiers of the Presidential Guard overthrew Bazoum on July 26th and have since held the president and his family hostage. If found guilty of high treason, Bazoum could face the death penalty. On Monday, the U.S. State Department criticized the plan to try Bazoum, warning it will worsen tensions in the region. Chris Kwaja is a senior researcher at the Center for Peace and Security Studies. He says the junta has no legal standing to pull off a trial because the military government is illegitimate.
For the same government that is a product of unconstitutional means to use the law in prosecuting Bazoum, you cannot give what you don't have. What we see the regime doing is an exercise of naked power. It is unconstitutional. They cannot exercise authority when they were not given that authority by the people.
ECOWAS has taken a tough stance on the coup in Niger, including border closures and asset freezes in a bid to restore constitutional order. Olawale says there's a possibility the junta, which has suspended the country's constitution, may retain the function of the judiciary for Bazoum's trial.
If they go to court and they prosecute him under treasonable felony, to hold him under the Niger constitution. But I don't think it will get to that end. I feel that pressure is mounting on the Niger regime. They have not received external support.
Last week, ECOWAS authorized activation of a regional standby force to reverse the coup if talks with the military government fail. But experts say the force could take weeks to assemble. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday, August 16, 2023. We now leave you with Kennedy singing in his native Kakwa language. The Kakwa are found in central Equatorial State, precisely in Yei River County. Listening to Kennedy singing in his native Kakwa language. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our only and able engineer, Peter Hindley, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.